Enjoy two reality-based fiction novels, Reality Check Stepmother Chronicles and Love Conquers All. Relax, relate, and release with author Angelon Edwards as she shares stories of complicated familial relationship dynamics. Embrace the insight of stepmom Carmen Fuller with her eye-opening experiences in the novel, Reality Check Stepmother Chronicles, and get connected with the drama-filled lives of Adrian and Essence in the novel Love Conquers All. Both novels are available online in paperback and ebook at xlibris.com, amazon.com, and bn.com. Check out her website at www.stepmother-chronicles.com and www.loveae.net for excerpts.
Welcome to Authors First on the Artist First Radio Network, artistfirst.com. Tony Kay in the studio. Questions or comments, send them to dj@artistfirst.com. This hour, we're privileged to introduce author Bobby Schaefer. Wow, bobbyschaefer.com, the website. She is the author of Love's Golden Dream. She's a fascinating guest, and special thanks to her publisher, Maria McGea, for scheduling the broadcast. Dancing with Bear Publishing. So, you've really got some good connections over there, and so important for every author audience to have a network of people who believe in your project and have the necessary skills to create a wonderful project like Bobby Schaefer's. Let's give her a warm welcome. How you doing, Bobby?
I'm doing just great. How are you doing?
Wow, how exciting. Boy, I ought to keep that music up a little bit. It's kind of nice. What's that in the background?
Hang on just a second.
Well, I'm too fat anyway, audience. I'm looking at my recording. Wow, I'm way up there. Did I blow your speakers?
No, we're just fine. Can you hear me?
Yeah. Oh, all right. I wanted to make sure I didn't absolutely blow up our audience's speakers, because we were really fat right there. We're going out worldwide to every nation on earth. Oh, our military listeners are tuning in right now from Afghanistan and Iraq and Libya and all points of the globe, all over Europe. Thank you, military personnel. Great to have you on board. Here we are. It's Eastern Standard Time, 8.05 p.m. in the great state of Ohio, just south of Cleveland and Lake Erie, the home of Mount Union College, artistfirst.com. Here we are. And our guest, Bobby Schaefer. Wow. Go to the website. You'll see what I mean right away. She's got a fabulous book, Love's Golden Dream. And Bobby, you must live in, you must live somewhere really special. Tell our audience where you're from.
I'm from a little town called Troop, Texas, and it's located about 15 miles from Tyler, the rose capital of the world, they say.
Now, what country is that in?
Well, that's in the big country of Texas, honey.
Absolutely. I'm a graduate of Lubbock Christian University in Lubbock, Texas, the home of Buddy Holly, and that's why I'm so good.
Absolutely. No, all Texans are fairly good at something. Of course, it could be just telling tall tales, and that's where I come in.
Well, now, born and raised in the great state of Texas?
Absolutely.
And a little dust in your veins?
Oh, a whole lot, around, especially this time of year.
Your hometown, on the scale, what do you have, 300 in town or more?
Well, probably 300 in town at this very minute, but most of the time they have about 1,200 roaming around, especially on Saturday morning when all the ranchers and farmers come into town.
There you go. Now, that is a close-knit community, and you really get to know people, don't you?
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Especially if you've lived here about 30 minutes, because by that time you've met everybody in town. My husband always says we have two main streets, Main and Plum, and if you get off Main, you're plumb out of town.
Yes, that's right. Now, I imagine you could probably have been married to half the town or be related to half the town, too.
Oh, I'm sure. In fact, the more I go there, the more everybody starts to look a whole lot alike.
Yeah, that's right. So the blood runs deep in a small town and absolutely fabulous. I love those communities. One, of course, Lubbock was a little bigger town than that, and it's a lot bigger today. Lubbock, Texas is, I think, 300,000, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's a pretty good size. Actually, Tyler is pretty good. It's probably about 150,000 now.
More than that. I heard. There's the voice I wanted to hear.
Yeah,
so you're not,
my husband's sitting over there. He makes sure I get the facts right.
All right. I like that. So together, though, now your husband grew up in the same town?
No, my husband's from Louisiana.
Louisiana. Okay.
Right.
Well, he's spicing things up a little bit with some Creole.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I can handle that and the crawdads.
Yep, and he likes that gumbo.
And the gumbo, oh yeah. And that's where I had my first alligator.
Oh, really? Well, I don't recall that I've ever had alligator, and I'm not thinking that I may ever go to that route, but I'll take everybody's word for it. It tastes like chicken.
Well, let me tell you, I live near, not far, a stone's throw from the Football Hall of Fame in Canton, Ohio, and your husband will know where that is.
Oh, yeah, he traveled for a living for 30 years, and he's been all up in your area back and forth. In fact, he was asking me where you're located. I told him, well, Ohio, and he says, well, there's a lot of Ohio, and I said, well, yeah, but I'm sure I'll find out a little bit more about it.
Well, I'll bet he knows where the Football Hall of Fame's at, in Canton, Ohio.
Oh, yeah, he's just nodding.
Yep, and my lovely wife and I live near Walsh University. And it's a great university, and we love that community as well. It's a Catholic foundation church, but a great series of churches in that same size of university in our backyard.
Oh, yeah, those places are so versatile, and they've got so many wonderful people from so many wonderful places, and I'm sure each one of them has got a story they could just enthrall you with.
So you and your husband, you have some time together.
Oh, yeah. We're both retired now, so we sometimes have more time than we know what to do with.
Well, but today, you know, my father-in-law will be how old? 92 or something. Well, hey, he's looking for 100.
Oh, definitely. You know, as we get older, our thoughts of old change, and we get younger and younger as we get older and older.
So, I mean, think about when we're young in a decade, how many jobs could we have? Well, maybe between 16 and 26, we could have 10 jobs.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And then maybe between 26 and 36, we'd have 2 or 3 jobs.
Oh, yeah.
And then between 36 and 55, maybe 1 job.
We can hope.
But the mother job is
awesome. Yeah. And then, but today we have decades ahead of us beyond retirement.
Well, that's true, and that's why I think it's so important, especially in this day and time, with people living longer, that when you retire, you don't just stop. You start thinking about what I can do, and that's what led me into writing.
Yeah, and it's a great field to be in. And now, does your husband write, or is he your best critic?
Oh, he's my best critic, but he's an artist. He can draw some amazing things. In fact, the picture that's on the cover of the next book coming out, Legend of Eagle Creek, you see a house behind the main character, and that house is a house he drew. So he's part of my work.
Well, now, there, that makes sense. See, there's the compliment. You both have an artistic interest.
Oh, yeah.
In literature and graphically, with the eye.
Oh, he's brilliant when it comes to artistic endeavor. He can draw and do all kind of things.
Now, did the two of you have children together? Or raise children?
No, he has a son living in Virginia.
Yeah.
And I have four children living in this area. I'm sorry, his son lives in Tennessee.
Yeah, Tennessee. And you have four children in the area, so I suppose now grandchildren.
Oh, yeah, I have three grandchildren, and they range from about 26 to, well, almost 15.
All right, Mom, you hearing this? Mom?
Yeah.
Okay, it's all right. Hey, 72 years old, 75 years old. Oh, wow. Hey, write for the next 10 or 15 years. You have a whole nother career and really do things that, well, when I was raising kids, I couldn't do any of those things.
Well, there's a lot of people that do, but I don't know that I could have.
Well, we had to put food on the plate.
Absolutely.
Okay, I mean, that was number one. I'm saying there are a season in your life that you can say, hey, I have time to do maybe some things that I couldn't do before.
Yep, and this is my time.
And it's your time, and you're having a blast.
Absolutely. I couldn't have planned it any better.
What could be better than feeding the mind and the creative juices that come out and thinking of characters and roles and plots and themes and then the people that you work with? We mentioned your publisher. What a doll.
Oh, yeah. Marie McGahey is her name. And she, my books were more, I consider them the Hallmark Channel type books. And there weren't a lot of publishers. They wanted a lot of drama, and they wanted a lot of bloodshed and a lot of eroticism, and I kind of didn't. And a friend of mine who belongs to a writer's club that I belong to mailed in an article that she had written, that she had read about Dancing with Bear, and the president of the writer's club sent it out to all the members. And it was Marie McGahey's Dancing with Bear, and that was exactly what I was looking for, and she was publishing exactly what I was writing, and I was so fortunate and so lucky that we connected.
She is a talent.
Oh, no doubt. No doubt.
And a real human being, and, you know, when you have that combination, then you've got a winner. Today, the technology is out there, but maneuvering the technology and getting people to do what they say they're going to do.
Oh yeah, that's true. You get all these promises and all these if you do this and if you do that, but Marie is not that way. I mean, all she said when she accepted my story was, it needs some work. If you don't mind working on it, I'd like to offer you a contract. And what could I say? I didn't expect it to be accepted word for word, you know, because I knew it wasn't perfect.
Well, the fact is, you have a published book, and you're an author now, and you belong to an author's group, and you're doing things that you never thought you would have time to do. You have a supportive husband who's also creative when it comes to the arts and complements what you're all about, and it's like having and beginning a whole new life.
Well, it absolutely is. In fact, I started publishing some short stories probably about 5 years ago, and the local little newspaper did a little article, and they said that I was starting a new chapter in my life, and I kind of liked the way they phrased it, and that was, I took that and made that chapter into a new career.
Now, this is October 11th of 2011, if you're playing those numbers tonight, but the book will actually be available to the public October 15th of 2011. And to learn more about our guest and the book, visit the website Bobby, www.bobby, B-O-B-B-I-E, Schaefer, Schaefer.com. BobbySchaefer.com. Now, if you have your cell phone, your Android, your internet access in your palm, you can simply go to BobbySchaefer.com while you listen to the broadcast.
Well, Tony, actually, the book is available today.
It is.
Yeah, I didn't know anything about it till this about mid-morning when she said that she had went ahead since everything kind of fell into place and we got everything together in time that she was going to put it online, and she put it on my... In fact, the first time I knew about it, I read it on my Facebook. So, yeah, it is available today through Dancing with Bear. You get on that site and then go to the bookstore and click on bookstore, and you'll see the picture. And, in fact, there's a whole article about the story.
Well, woohoo!
I know. I was going around woohooing all day long, believe you me. And I went to town today, and, of course, as I said, within about 15 minutes, the whole town knew my book was available today.
Well, you know, you have to have the party. I mean, that's just plain right out fun. There, have your big book signing and, you know, get the band and kick the heels.
Well, when I went in and told my friend, who is the librarian at our local library, first thing she did was snatch down her calendar and said, okay, when do you want your book signing? So we've already got my first book signing set up for November the 5th on a Saturday morning between 10 and 12. And I spoke at a women's civic league last month and was telling them about the book, and I had pictures of the cover, so they've already signed me up for a book signing November 22nd. So, yep, things are rolling along, and I just couldn't be happier.
Now, I imagine you joined the ranks of others from your town that have written books.
Well, actually... Lucky as I am, as far as I know, I'm the only one here that's written a book. But I belong to a writer's guild, and like I said, we're not too far from Tyler. And we have a lot of authors in that writing guild. And we often speak as a, you know, three or four of us get together and speak as a group. And, of course, have book signings after the meetings. So they have all been sending me emails all day today and telling me how happy they were for me, and I know they are, because they're the kind of people that if I had a problem, you have to understand, when I first wrote my first book, it was simply a, I think I'll write a book thought right out of the blue. I didn't know how to format the paper. I didn't know how to set it up. Didn't even know where my name went on the page, but I went ahead and wrote the book anyway. Several weeks later, I saw a little tiny two-lined advertisement in the local newspaper advertising or inviting people to come to this writer's guild. And I went, and these people are the people who answered all my questions. If they didn't know the answer, they told me who I could go to and who to talk to. And they're the ones who, I also belong to a writing critique group that are members of this guild. We get together every other Thursday and take samples of our work in, and we go over each other's work and find the errors a new pair of eyes can see that the person that's been working on it for hours and hours just missed. And every time I go in to tell them I got something accepted, the next meeting we have a little party with cake and tea, and everybody sings a happy birthday, but they sing happy book or happy article. So it's just such a fun bunch of people, and they're as happy as if they were to have done it themselves.
Well, I'd like to write a book about all of them, especially you, Bobby Schaefer.
How kind, how kind.
Well, I think it's tremendous that you could reflect on a history when you've been in one place.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
And many people you've known for a lifetime.
Well, that's true. We have been here probably about close to 15 years, and I've only been writing probably... I think I wrote my first story in 2007. And so I've only been writing a few years on a serious note. But it's just like when you talk to my fellow writers, it's like we grew up together, you know. In fact, over the years we've been together in the club, we probably know as much about each other as we did our friends in high school.
Well, of course, Garfield from Cincinnati, Ohio, and McKinley from Canton, Ohio, two great presidents from Ohio. We have a history of people, of ethnicity, of thought, of creativity. Garfield was a scholar of the highest art, grew up in a shack with a dirt floor, but rose to university professor and was friends with, and in the end, Graham Bell couldn't save him, Dr. Graham Bell, inventor of the phone. But what I'm getting at here is we connect with a community, with a town, with a philosophy. We make friends. We can make a difference there. I mean, you've written a book. You're an author in your community. And I always tell our authors that's something to be very proud of. And out of a population, you would expect some authors. In your population, you're the one. So have fun with that. You could bring new notoriety to your community and popularity to your community. And I wish you the very best as you get your book out to the local community, to bookstores and the local hair shop and so forth.
Well, yeah. I just hope this encourages others who have always said, gee, I'd like to write, but I think it's too late, or I'm too old, or I just don't feel like it. You will feel like it once you start. It doesn't matter how old you are. You have a story to tell. And if you don't know how, you just start writing and somebody will show you how to get it all formatted up. And in fact, I have helped a lot of people get some stories published. And I know that if anybody out there is interested, if you'll just contact me, get on my website. I got an email address there. If you're interested in writing, contact me. I can tell you how to start.
It's therapeutic on many levels.
Oh, absolutely. You get lost. And in fact, sometimes your characters, you become as close to your characters as you do the real people you know.
Yeah, I imagine your husband and those around you gets confusing talking about people they haven't met.
Well, actually, they feel like they've met them too.
That's right. That's right. But that's the element of believability. And the challenge for every author, how can I make an audience, someone reading these words, really see what I see in this person?
Well, I have found that I don't really, a lot of my fellow writers tell me that they can completely make up a character that's totally strange to them. And in one of my books, I do have someone like that, but it's someone that I would like to know. But most of my characters, there's always a little bit of somebody I know in them. That way it makes it so much easier to know what they're going to say, to know how they're going to act, to know how they feel about a situation. And I'm really proud when I get through to say, oh, that's my grandfather, or that's what my mother would do, or that reminds me of my daughter. And I think, you know, that if you write it with this real emotion, that you're attached to somebody who's that character's based on, it can't help but be real.
All right, Bobby Schaefer, I know we've probably confused our audience immensely, but it's time. Tell us about Love's Golden Dream.
Love's Golden Dream actually started when I watched a National Geographic show about 4 years ago, when these treasure hunters found this sunken ship off the coast of South Carolina. There was millions of dollars worth of gold recovered. And they mentioned in the story that there had been a book called The Ship of Gold. I became intrigued, fascinated, because in this documentary it had mentioned some of the characters, or actually the passengers, really passengers that had been on board, the fact that it had run into this horrible hurricane and that it had sank. The women and children had been saved, but they lost 500 and some odd male passengers and crew. So I started doing a little bit of research, and the more I researched, the more I kept thinking, what if one of those women was this kind of person and this had happened to them? And so the beginning of my story, my heroine is on the SS Sonora, and she is leaving California, escaping, actually, from a very abusive relationship. She had been duped into running away with this man who had promised her the moon, the sun, and the stars, and ended up beating her, robbing her blind, and almost dead. But on this ship, it changes in Havana, and they board this SS Central America. And that's going to take her, she thinks, to New York to start a new life, hopefully, and secretly, as someone her family can never find because she's so ashamed that she had gone against their wishes. However, being rescued after this hurricane, she had befriended an old man who, knowing that he could not survive this terrible hurricane, gave her his money belt and a satchel that was filled with gold. Once she reached land, she changed her appearance, all of her clothes, bought this old horse, and started west to start a new life as a new person. And hopefully, no one would ever know what happened to Amy McKay. Well, that road is never as easy as you think it's going to be. And Amy ran into a passenger that she had met on board, of course, handsome and unforgettable. She discovers that the man she ran away from is looking for her, but she thinks he'll never find her. She buys a beautiful piece of property that the Indians used to call Eagle Creek. And Eagle Creek is going to be the central figure in all the series that follow. And you'll just have to find out how Amy makes it, what she does, and if she truly has a happy ending.
Oh, come on.
Well, let me put it this way. I love a happy ending.
Well, now has to be some element of surprise, magic, mystique, or probability that there are issues or problems that have to be overcome.
Well, there's always, life is that way. You can't live a week without an issue that you have to deal with, without a problem you have to solve or overcome. And Amy wonders if she's made the right choice many, many times, but she never gives up, and she struggles. And she finds along the way friends that would do anything for her because they know that she would stand by them through a hurricane. And she's one of those people that perseveres through summer, through winter, through fear, and almost death. But she never gives up.
You know, gold, that's a good analogy, but it's like the man standing with his son saying, "There's gold in them hills, son." And the son, then the man hands him a shovel. And the son says, "Well, what do I do with this?"
Absolutely, absolutely.
You know?
Hand it to me, but don't make me dig
for it. But the gold, well, where is it? Well, it's in the mountain, and you got to find it.
That's right. It's not as easy as it sounds.
So, you know, love's golden dream, is a lot more complicated than, well, oh, yeah. I just stumbled over it one day.
Yeah, Amy thinks that having this gold is the answer, you know, that she's seeking. That
yeah,
it's
unless it's
to solve her problem.
And there's fool's gold, too, right?
Absolutely.
And the false sense of what gold offers and how...
Out that the gold is in the hearts of her friends.
That's right.
And that gold comes in many, many different faces.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's the great thing about the analogy here. It's love's golden dream.
That's
right. And you can do so much with that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. The thing about it is that the old man that she befriends on this ship passes on a legacy that he knows is lost if he doesn't do something now. Amy is absolutely positive that he has given her a legacy that she can't just let it stop there. She, too, must pass it on. And she worries and worries about how she, as someone in disguise, can make a difference. But then she realizes, like we all do eventually, it's not what you look like that matters. It's what you have in your heart. And it's the legacy you pass on to others. It may not necessarily be money, but if it is, then you've got a real winner.
Bobby Schaefer, our author, loves Golden Dream, the book, available at bobbyschaefer.com. Get your copy right away. Now, every story has a backdrop, a sense of time, a period. Is there a setting for your characters? What era or time frame are they working in?
Well, Amy starts off when the actual SS Sadora left, which was August the 20th in 1857. That was a time where, I can't say women were chattels, but women really didn't have many rights. They couldn't go out and get a job. They couldn't buy property. They really couldn't own anything. They had to depend on the kindness of strangers to, you know, if they didn't have family money. And although Amy was born into a wealthy family, she thought that her romance with the first gentleman that she met was going to solve her problems. Then when she found out she was on her own, and it was 1857, she decided the only alternative she had was to become a man, because men could get away with anything back then, and to her, that was the only answer. The setting, of course, is in South Carolina. The years of the book are 1857 and 1858. The times was before the Civil War, when slavery was still in effect, and slavery does come into the story when she discovers some several families hiding in the back of her property that escaped from a wagon that was taking them from one plantation to another. She finds a wonderful friend who is a banker that actually invests some of her money into, and you'll recognize him. There was a man named John Deere who had just decided to import some steel from England for the new plows. The Atlantic Telegraph had just been developed, and he thought that was a splendid idea. So the time was exciting, just as every generation has an exciting time. My grandfather remembers seeing the first car drive into Jacksonville, Texas, the first car anybody had seen. And then he was also lucky enough to see a man walk on the moon. He thinks he was born in the most wonderful time. So every generation has its ups and its downs and its glories and its downfalls. But 1857 is the setting for this story. And South Carolina is the background.
And people didn't live that long back then. If you made it to your 50s, you were considered old.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. That's why when she had met Marcus Alexander, who was the nemesis, she was 20. And she considered herself an old maid. And she was so thrilled that this handsome stranger had fallen in love with her when she had already given up on ever getting married.
Yeah, I mean, by her age, you could have already had five or six children.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, to me, that's one of the interesting things about writing historical fiction, is because I get to visit those places. I enjoy the research just as much as I enjoy writing the story. Today is, on a contemporary level, one of the books in this series will take place in the 2000s. My third book is going to take place just at the end of the Korean War. The second book takes place just at the turn of the 1903, turn of the century. And I have just enjoyed thoroughly going into every one of those eras and researching the clothes and the music and what they said and the way they talked and what their houses looked like and, you know, the furniture, the period of the time. And that's why I can't say historical fiction is my favorite, because I enjoy fantasy. I've got 10 young adult middle school age fantasy books. And, of course, in those books, you create your own world, your own time, your own era, and your own background.
Now, would you mind if we attempted to reach Maria?
Oh, no, please.
Why don't we try to get her on the line?
Oh, that would be great.
All right, audience, we'll be back.
Thank you for joining Authors First on the Artists First Radio Network with our very special guest joining us through the wonders of our technology. We've been successful at reaching up. That's right, Marie Magea. Marie.
Hi. How are you doing, Tony? How are you doing, Bobby?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thank you.
And my last name is pronounced Magea. Hey.
Magea, hey. And now, how did the two of you meet?
I got an email from Bobby one day asking me if I would like to read a story she had written. And she actually did not send me Love's Golden Dream first. She sent, this is a three-book series, and she actually sent me the second book first. And I liked it. And then she told me that it was the second book in the series, and I was like, well, then send me the first one. So she sent me the first one, and I sent her contracts for the first two books, and then today Love's Golden Dream was released.
Congratulations. I can tell the energy flowing between the two of you.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. We're connected at the ear by the phone and by the fingers with the computer, no doubt.
Bobby is wonderful. Well, you know, I live about 20 miles north of the Texas state line in Oklahoma. So, and she lives in you live in southwest Texas, don't you?
No.
I don't live
far from you. I live in east Texas, just south, kind of southeast of Dallas.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Yeah, and I am on the east side of Dallas as well, but I'm north of Paris, Texas.
Right.
Yeah. So we're not really too far away from each other.
And I had a Honda Civic in Lubbock, Texas, and a dust storm came by and took all the paint right off.
Yeah, no doubt it can do that. I used to live in Colorado Springs, and we would have dust storms, and I would go to the school, and there was a place that you did not park because there was some trees on one end, and one end was clear, but if you parked on that corner and a dust storm came up, you would have your whole front of your car be sanded clean by the time the day was over.
Marie, Dancing with Bear Publishing. Introduce our audience.
Well, this came about, we opened our doors last June. I was married for many years to a man whose name was Bear, and he passed last year, and I wrote a book about our life together called Dancing with Bear, a Love Story. And I thought after he passed that I would be able just, to write the story and put it out there. And it was something very personal just for me. But then it took me 8 months to actually write it because I found it was just a little more difficult to write than I thought it would be. And then after in June was the six-month anniversary, and we went out to California to his brother's house, and we had a memorial service. And when I came home, I finished writing it, and it was released on June 23rd, which was our anniversary. And so afterwards, I was thinking about, because I have about 20 books that are out with other publishers, and I had been thinking about, you know, just self-publishing. Because it had gotten to be, you know, the contracts were extremely long, the royalties were extremely low, and the publishers were benefiting from my hard work. And so I decided, you know, I would just go ahead and self-publish. And then after Dancing with Bear, a love story came out, I thought, you know, there's probably other people with the same frame of mind I am, that, you know, it's just not working. And so why not, you know, start a publishing company? And I did. And I called it Dancing with Bear Publishing in his memory, and put out a few, you know, just some emails and posted on some groups. And within the first month, I had so many submissions that I actually had to close submissions to novels.
Oh, I think that's so great. I'm glad I slipped in there.
You were actually one of my first, Bobby, and Melinda Elmore was actually the first, and then you were the second one.
All right.
And then from there, it just, there were so many. And so right now, I've been working my behind off.
Oh, I know you
have. The Halloween anthology, and there's Halloween books all coming out this month, and Love's Golden Dream was the first one to get out this month, and then I've got I got so many submissions for children's books that we opened a sister site called Dancing with Bears Children's Line, because the cubs like to read too.
Oh, yeah.
So we have a lot of children's books that will be coming out, and we've got a couple of Christmas anthologies, a few Thanksgiving stories that will be out, and then in January, some more, we'll have novels coming out January, February, March. And then I'm into the Easter, Valentine's Day, and all of those anthologies. So I told my daughter the other day, I said, I really did not realize work I was asking for when I did.
Oh, I can imagine. I even hate to email you because I'm so afraid I'm going to hesitate and stop you for just a minute because I know you're on a run. And I thought it's going to take her 15, 20 minutes to get back to where she was or in the mode she was in. But sometimes you're my inspiration and my mentor. And
well, I know that you're brand new to this, and I remember when my very first book came out, I had no one to tell me what to do. I thought that when my first book was published, that some magical little fairies did all of the promotions for me, and I just sat back and collected royalties.
Wouldn't that be nice?
It would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
I had no idea that writing the book was the easy part. Promotion is the work.
Well, that and the fact that I think I emailed her one time and I said, Marie, I think I've already corrected this three or four times. I mean, what's the deal? And she writes back and she goes, nanny, nanny, nanny. It takes a long time, doesn't it?
It does take a long time to get edits right. And especially with Bobby's book, because she doesn't just write a little page turner. Now, Bobby's books, you're sitting down for the long haul. I actually had to make the book larger to cut about 100 pages off of it, so the finished size came out larger than it was originally intended to, because it was almost 600 pages at that point.
Well, like I told you, though, in an email, it was a lot longer than that before I did a lot of editing. I was talking to a speaker we had at a workshop, and I told him how many words I had, and he looked at me and he said, well, that's too long. I said, well, how do you know? He said, I'm telling you, lady, that's too long. Well, I thought, well, I guess he knows a lot more than I do because I didn't know squat.
Well, and during the editing process, we cut out a whole lot of it, too.
I don't know exactly
how many pages we took off during editing, but we went through it 4 or 5 times and cut pages out of it, and it was still nearly 600 pages. So
yeah, and you really didn't take out anything that was, you know, that changed one single thing. I am long-winded. I'm the first to admit it.
That's what makes you a good storyteller. You go for the details.
I appreciate that.
Well, you know, authors often lose track when they're writing. You know, if you get really involved, you're trying to do a lot of things, especially in the historical setting. Now, Marie, is that something that appealed to you in choosing to work with Bobby?
Well, yes, I love historical. I love American history. And I have several books that are American history. And when I would start researching my historicals, I would get so lost in the research, I would forget to write the book.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So I love American history, and especially that middle era of the 1800s, during the Civil War and then right after during the Indian Wars. That's my favorite period of time, and that's the setting of Love's Golden Dream. So it was right there in my favorite time period. And her characters were so well developed, and the storyline was just wonderful. And the plot had so many different twists and turns and angles. And I told her one time, we were at, I think, about 4th edits, and I said, you know how you know this is a good book? Because I still cry at all the same places.
Oh, I know. You're making me cry right now with all your kind words. Well, I love what I do, and to find somebody else that likes it, that liked it, period, was such an honor, such an honor.
You know, today we live in such an instant society. We want to mix it up quick and get to the point. And good literature doesn't work that way. It takes time.
It does.
Yeah, there's about the only thing that I like that's in the fast world is fast food. Everything else, just slow it down a little bit. I'm getting too old to try to keep up with this fast-paced world. But I will pull in for a quick hamburger now and then.
Well, and you know, Baron and I raised 12 kids, and I often had at least that many or more at the dinner table. I always fix supper for at least 20 to 30 people. And so I've always had that real family orientation thing, and I have just found out my number 40th grandchild is due next year. So I have this...
Oh, congrats. I didn't know that.
Yes, I just found out.
Knew about 39.
Yeah, number 40.
Wow.
And so I like that family feeling, and that's what I try to bring to Dancing with Bear Publishing, is I try to treat my authors like they are members of my family, and they are people I care about, and I hope they all get that.
You did, my dear.
I want everyone to feel like, you know, that I always have time for them and that I'm never too busy to answer their emails and I'm never too busy to talk to them. And everyone has my phone number and they're all free to call me. And I want them all to know that, you know, I am there for them. And, you know, our tagline on the site is because the authors come first with us. And I want everyone to know that the authors do come first with me. I have really short contracts. I give really high royalties because I want them to know that their work means something to me, and I want them to feel like they are getting paid for their time and for what they are really worth. And I want them to feel like it's a family atmosphere. And I try to be very relaxed and easy to, you know, pretty easygoing, and I hope I succeed in that, and that everyone knows that, you know, I do care about each and every one of them.
Oh, that's very obvious. There were so many rejections I got with people that put little tacky things on there, and I wanted to call them up and say, what have you written lately? You know, I mean, you can tell that you're a writer because you know what writers, how they feel and what we go through. You know, but I just, honest to goodness, I don't think that a lot of the people up there in the publishing world, I think they probably made a try and didn't make it and decided to be a publisher and turn their work over to let somebody else, you know, do it for them. But you, no, ma'am, you are the heart of Dancing with Bear. You are our heart. and you are a member of our family, just like we're a member of yours.
Oh, thank you so much.
Marie, what can I say? What's for dinner?
With 40 kids, you know, she could
what's for dinner?
Me and you.
Absolutely. And I think it's not, it takes a village. You've made a village.
I've tried.
You made a village. Not it takes a village. You created a village. So congratulations to you and your lovely family and all of your hard work and for making this quality author, Bobby Schaefer, available to the public. You've done a fabulous job. Both of you have worked tirelessly to make this happen. And now that it's out there for the public, well, they'll be the judge. But at least the two of you know that you have scrutinized every word, every paragraph, every thought.
And every apostrophe.
Yep, and you've delivered every possible option to the public to enjoy and appreciate the content of the book. And we know that many more projects are going to be coming our way to the public through your hard work. So thank you very much, both of you, for your professionalism and for the thoroughness of your material. Now, our time has run out. Marie, tell me, is there anything that you'd like to share with our audience? Do you have a Twitter account, a Facebook account, other websites that they should be aware of?
Yes, sir, on www.dancingwithbearpublishing.com, and there's buttons on there for our Twitter and our Facebook. And my own site is www.remagehe.com.
Awesome.
And I'm also all over Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and just Google me. I'm everywhere.
Well, thank you for joining us, and I hear you have some company in the background. perhaps a future client, your grooming.
No doubt.
That is my granddaughter, Megan. She's going to be 2 on Friday.
Oh, what fun.
She has already written her first book.
No doubt. I believe that.
It's actually going to be coming out next year.
All right.
And, Bobby, not to leave you out, anyone out there on planet Earth you'd like to say hello to?
I'd like to say hello to my son, Carrie, my daughter, Connie, Kim, and Kelly. And everybody can Google my name, and I'm on Twitter, Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm just everywhere.